Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Five Rounds Podcast, the only podcast out there with a cardio for those deep water championship rounds. I am Mags, and as always, I'm joined by my son, Carlos. Carlos, how are you doing?
I'm not too bad. You can call me Mystic Max. I predict these things.
So, guys, we have literally just watched UFC 257, McGregor versus Poirier. And yeah, no, it went wrong with our stream. No, no ESPN or BT Sports issues for us.
We definitely paid for it.
Yeah, they're definitely going to be coming at us. How the fuck have these guys got a podcast out on this already when I cut the stream on purpose? But yeah, what a fucking card. For people who haven't watched it, just get your $70 back and find an illegal stream next time. But let's quickly run through these prelims and early prelims. So we started the card with Amir Albazi again, the decision against Zalgas Zumagulov in the flyweight division. Then we got Masvidal Evloev picking up the decision against Nick Lentz. Going into the prelims, we then got Khalil Rountree losing by decision to Marcin Prachnyor. And then Juliana Pena picking up the third round submission against Sarah McMahon. Brad Tavares got the decision against Antonio Carlos Jr. in the middleweights, and then the featured prelim and the thrown together fight after the ridiculousness that happened with Otman Al-Zatir.
P.S. You're a bellend.
Yeah, so Armin Sarukian picking up the decision victory against Matt Frivola. So then we go into the main card. Five fights on this main card started in the women's strawweight division with Marina Rodriguez taking on Amanda Ribas. Amanda Ribas coming in with a lot of hype. She's the woman, if you remember recently, she basically speared Paige VanZant on her head and basically was the fighter that sent Paige VanZant out of the UFC and into bare-knuckle boxing. So, yeah, this was a really interesting fight. I thought that Ribas had the better of the first round. I thought her shots were landing a lot better. The jabs and the leg kicks were really working. She got a decent takedown and was able to control a lot on the ground. Not a lot of action in terms of like getting shots off, but definitely controlling and like bullying her opponent on the floor. Then basically going into the second round, and it was a totally different fight. Marina Rodriguez landed some big shots and a huge knee. Drops Ribas with a massive left where she just folded in half, went in and kind of like did a quick flurry. But then for some inexplicable reason, Herb Dean almost fell over the two girls whilst he was trying to crane to see whether Ribas was fine. And I think Rodriguez saw that as Herb finishing the waving the fight off. So she gets up to celebrate. Ribas gets back to her feet, ready to fight, but basically the light was on, but there was nobody at home. And Herb Dean looks at Marina and goes, "I ain't stopped the fight, knock this bitch out." So she just goes over, cracks her a couple more times, and does actually finish the fight. Weird ending, but a big victory for Marina Rodriguez.
Absolutely. Obviously, the game plan coming in there for Amanda was to take Marina down as soon as she could. Obviously, Marina being the more efficient striker on the feet, it makes more sense, obviously, go in there and take your opponent down. And that's exactly what Amanda were able to do in the first round. She was able to control that vast majority of the first round.
Mm-hmm.
And coming into the second, it only took less than a minute for Marina to come out a little bit more with that fiery energy, and she were able to get a little bit more of her offense off, and she were able to do that. And obviously the finish is a bit, some people I saw on, obviously on Twitter, that it were a bit controversial, but I think, how was it controversial? Like, obviously, Herb Dean, he stepped over, and you could see how it could somewhat be controversial when you look at it as he stepped over him and did he stop the fight? No, technically he didn't stop the fight because verbally he didn't stop the fight. He doesn't, just because he touched the fighters doesn't mean that there's not in the rules that says he has to touch the fighters to stop the fight. Yeah. Even
on the replays, it wasn't even a touch. He literally looked like he was looking over to see if he could get the kind of like idea whether Ribas was okay, and like his body weight or his kind of centre of gravity just took him like almost over the top of the girls, and I think that's what Marina has seen and then kind of like assumed he's waved the fight off.
Yeah, obviously that's what she's doing. Obviously English is not a first language in the first place, so if someone maybe in the audience shouted obviously stop or the fart's over, she could have easily just, obviously there's a lot of stuff going on in the arena, especially with fans now being back in the arena. I know it might be 2,000 fans, but Jesus Christ, especially over the speakers of the television, it sounds a hell of a lot more than 2,000 fans in that arena. So
it was good to hear fans back, to be fair.
Yeah,
as much as we've enjoyed the fighters interacting with the commentary because they can hear them of the dead silence of the arena, it was good to hear fans back.
Yeah, absolutely. Just the passion of the fans, just you miss it after a while. Obviously, again, you love the fact that you could hear coaches and fighters speaking and you could hear the shots bouncing off each other's skull, but you want that passion back in mixed martial arts, and I'm glad UFC are being the ones to open the actual sport back up in a safe way to do it.
Yeah.
But Marina, obviously, it were a perfect game plan for her, but in the first round it wasn't looking for her, and obviously she were able to capitalise in that second round, and you fight until the ref stops the fight, and you as a fighter, it doesn't stop, and I wouldn't like to see any sort of negative feedback that she's getting due to that, because obviously she's there to fight at the end of the day, and it's either the doctor or the referee that stops the fight. It's like Masvidal said, super necessary. Up until the ref pulls you off, you're fighting.
Absolutely. So let's get into this second fight. Mahmoud Muradov taking on Andrew Sanchez, and a very dominant display by Mahmoud Muradov. In the first round, he was easily the more active and efficient fighter, landing some really good shots. Sanchez has shot him for takedowns, and Muradov was able to easily stuff him and kind of hit back with the leg kicks. Going towards the end of the round, he did kind of like start throwing a little bit wild, which opened him up for some counters from Sanchez. But all in all, Muradov really kind of like dominated that first round. Sanchez come out in the second round and turned his game plan up a little bit more, landed some more shots, and really kind of like made Muradov question like his range, and he was really kind of struggling. But then he landed a knee to the groin, which gave Muradov a little bit of a break and was able to basically change up his game plan. Again, he was really good with stuffing the takedowns from Sanchez. And the thing that really separated Muradov from Sanchez was when they come in from clinches and stuff takedowns, he was able to land shots on the way out where Sanchez wasn't. We get a little bit of back and forth towards the end of the second where both were landing some really clean shots. To the point where Sanchez really got wobbled towards the end of the fight, but luckily he was able to hang on and get into the third round. But to be fair, it was to no avail, because that third round they just came out to absolutely swing, and Muradov was landing some big, big shots. That was not to say that Sanchez was just getting dominated. He was landing shots of his own, some really good peppering jabs. And then Muradov was able to land an uppercut and body shots, and then he was just able to land a flying knee, which Carlos said was almost like in slow motion the way he landed it. That staggered Sanchez and Muradov was able to just put him up against the fence, and in comes Jason Herzog to wear the fight off, and Muradov picked up the third round TKO.
Absolutely, you couldn't argue with the stoppage. Even though he was on his feet, he was taking a hell of a lot of punishment, and Muradov was the better boxer in my eyes. He was the more clean and technical boxer, especially in the striking department. And yes, even though they were both throwing a hell of a lot and it looked a bit wild swingy at certain times, Sanchez looked like to be getting the one who was the later on into the rounds, into going into the second and the third, seemed to be getting more gassed and losing energy, whereas Muradov seemed to be being smart with it and keeping it, not putting it all out there on the line straight away, basically like spacing it out in a way of when to attack and when to just basically put the foot on the brake and when to take it off. So he was able to actually get the finish in the end, and you can see that Sanchez knew that fight he would be. He had no objection to the referee stopping the fight. I think he was just more concerned about actually being able to get his breath back without getting worried about getting punched in the face. And it's somewhat horrible to see that, but somewhat in a way not common, because Sanchez has always been one of these who's always been up and down, two wins, one loss,
yeah,
one win, two losses, and so on. He's never been one of these who's always been consistent. But obviously Muradov now, he debuted in the UFC.
Yeah, this was his first fight back since 2019. Suffered with quite a few like setbacks, but he's now 3-0 in the UFC.
So that's it. He's like I said, when he debuted in 2019, he went on a 2-fight win streak, got injured and come back, and people had the doubts about him in this fight because it was like, he's got injured, is he going to come back to Sanchez, who in a lot of people's opinion now, he's octagon ready because he's had a lot of experience now in the UFC. He made his debut back in 2016, so that's a lot of time in the UFC and a lot of years to be in that sort of organisation. So it's in a way it can be good for you to be there for that long, but also in a way you somewhat can have a target on your back because you have these young and up-and-comers thinking, oh, you've been in the UFC a long time, I got a good win over you. That can somewhat rocket my name up, and Muradov seems like he's doing that in the middleweight division. Now, going on forward from him, obviously he's got a lot of learning to do because that middleweight division is stacked to the brim with phenomenal fighters, and not just phenomenal fighters, people who can hit very, very hard. So that's the sort of thing he's got to look forward to. And I know it's one of them things, it's like, oh, well done, they're going to go to hospital. It's one of them, but he's one step closer for him to get up them rankings. But then in a way, you're only getting harder and harder. Mm-hmm. But then you're in the UFC. If you wasn't expecting that, then I don't know why you would be.
Yeah, exactly. So straight into the middle of this main event, and we've got Scotland's own Joanne Calderwood taking on Jessica Rae, and this was a career-making performance, I thought, from Joanne Calderwood. Really, really dominant decision victory. For me, the three rounds were incredibly similar in terms of how the game plan went. Calderwood was able to keep Jessica at range with the lengthy jabs and the mix-up of the kicks to the body and to the head. When Jessica was able to get in close and get the clinch, she landed some really good shots. But on the way out of the clinch, the difference maker was that Joanne Calderwood was able to land shots where Jessica wasn't, and that really kind of upped her output. The other thing that really kind of stood out for me in this fight for Joanne is that she did so well to avoid the takedown. I think if she'd have got tucked down to the ground and controlled on the ground, it would have been a totally different fight. She would have really struggled against Jessica Rae. But in this match, she was able to avoid that and land the head kicks, which were just really brutal. The body kicks, the oblique kicks, which kept Jessica from being able to shoot in. and she really stuck to that game plan, and it served her so well. There were a couple of times where she kind of tried to break out of that game plan. I remember in the second round she went for a spinning elbow and Jessica was able to almost secure the takedown, basically pinning Calderwood to the fence. But all in all, I thought that this was a brilliant controlled performance by Joanne Calderwood, really able to keep Jessica frustrated by not allowing her to play her own game and keeping her at bay with the body kicks. And the sprawl at the end kind of rubber stamped it for me, the way she was able to basically tell Jessica, look, I've got your number in this fight and there's nothing you can do that's really going to harm me. And she got the unanimous decision, two judges giving her all three rounds. A classy display by Joanne Calderwood.
Absolutely, a good game plan. Obviously, the game plan for Joanna Calderwood was to go in there and somewhat, in a way, survive, because you've got Jessica R, who is good on the feet, but then also is phenomenal with her wrestling. And Joanne Calderwood is not an easy woman to take down, as we saw tonight. Obviously, the stats speak for themselves, the reason why Jessica lost the fight. And you can say, when he was watching the fight, you can see where it was so tight in some areas, and obviously, like you already said, Calderwood on the way out was just landing shots clean, leg kicks, oblique kicks, body kicks, knees, uppercuts, jabs, every single time. When she was moving in and out, there was always something to back it up. It's not like she was just moving out and staying there and not throwing anything. She was always being on the attack, even when she was being defensive. So that was very impressive on her part, and especially when you've got someone like Jessica who's always wanting to take you down. If you're throwing them uppercuts in there, throwing them at weird angles, it always makes the wrestler double think in a way about taking you down, because when you're the wrestler and your opponent is a bit worried about you taking them down, they somewhat drop the guard. And then it actually ends up being your opponent, the one who's getting punched in the face, because they're more worried about you taking them down. Whereas now, the wrestler, in a way, is going, oh shit, she's using that uppercut a lot, and when I level change, I'm getting it in snozz with that. Mm-hmm. So, how do I do that? And most wrestlers end up going into the clinch, and that's exactly what Jessica R was doing, because she wasn't able to get the takedown. I think she got one out of four or five attempts. Now Calderwood got one out of three attempts. Obviously that's where she won in that department, just because she had less takedown attempts. That's the only reason why, even though they both got one for one, just because Jessica tried for more and failed. So that the stats are obviously higher. I think Jessica's around 20 odd and Calderwood's around 30 odd. So that's the only reason why them point difference make up the numbers on the judges' scorecard. And Calderwood, she were able to just execute the game plan that she had. Was able to, if you got to the ground, get back up to her feet. If she was in the clinch position, still worked. Don't make it look like you're just staying there and playing possum in a way. And mm-hmm. Even in the third round, when Calderwood went for that spinning back attack, even though she didn't get it and she ended up compromising herself and actually being on the ground for the best part of 30 seconds, Jessica R, in my opinion, even though I wasn't the judge, but I do believe this is what the judges were looking at, in my opinion, she wasn't doing anything in that 30 seconds. Yes, just because Jessica R was in control, Calderwood was actually throwing a lot of attacks whilst off her back. She was just hooked and hammerfish, just going like there was no tomorrow, just farting like she needed to actually get out of there. And it's saying she was actually doing more of the work in that last 30 seconds than Jessica did. Now, to obviously, I want to say an untrained eye in a way, but into some
Jessica
extent,
the untrained eye.
Well, yeah, Jessica the untrained eye. A lot of people look at that and go, oh, she's winning there because she's on top. And that's not necessarily the case. And
no. The
judges could look at that going, right, Calderwood's been the more aggressor. She's controlled the fight from near enough start to finish. Yes, there's been times where it's been a bit, oh, could that be ours? But more majority, it's been in the favour of Calderwood. and she was able to just follow through and keep with the same pressure as she did in the first, and she did with the third, and that really helped her out, because I think that startled Jessica. I don't think she had it in her head that this pressure was going to be able to continue for three rounds, especially in the heat of Dubai.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about the two fights that everyone got this card for. Michael Chandler.
Wow.
Former Bellator champion, someone who's always been on the list of best fighters outside of the UFC. It's never quite gone right for him to come to UFC, even when like his contracts have been up with Bellator. It's just the timing has not been right. 34 year old coming into the company. What a hype train, and getting one of the hardest fighters in that division straight away with Dan Hooker. We talk often about kind of the nerves of coming into UFC. There's always them first fight jitters. We've seen it with the likes of Will Brooks. We've seen it with the likes of Justin Gaethje. We've seen it's a real thing. People come to them, they don't understand how big of a difference it is from fighting the likes of Bellator, which is the second biggest company in the world. The step up to UFC is it's levels. It's as simple as that. And you either thrive or you wilt. And Michael Chandler fucking thrived.
Jesus.
This guy, you could see how happy he was that he finally made it to the big dance. And no one would have batted an eyelid if Dan Hooker didn't just absolutely put him away. But that just wasn't the case. Started off with Chandler really wanted to take this fight straight to Hooker, controlling the centre of the octagon. In fact, within about 30 seconds, he was actually getting really frustrated because Hooker just did not want to engage, and we were getting Michael Chandler who was just dropping his hands and saying, "What's going on? Are we having a fight here or not?" We eventually get a few kind of teasing kicks from Hooker. We get Michael Chandler landing a couple of shots to the body. Back and forth a little bit with the punches and the kicks, but then we get a body punch by Michael Chandler, which just knocks the absolute wind out of Dan Hooker, and then he follows it up with a bomb of a left hook, and you just see Dan Hooker's laugh leaving his body, absolutely just drops him to the floor. Basically jumps on him, pounds his face in with at least a dozen right hands before Mark Goddard comes in and stops it. That's how you make a statement. That's how you come into a company on your debut and throw your hat in the ring for this really tied up lightweight division. Michael Chandler is got to be in that conversation now, surely to God.
Surprise, surprise, there's a new king in that lightweight division. Simple as that. That man is not lying. He not only can fucking sell a fart, that man can put on a fart. A lot of people didn't know him. A lot of people just thought it was a hype train. A lot of people just thought he's coming in here as the next big thing and Dan Hooker's going to put his lights out. And my God, was a lot of people wrong. If you didn't watch him in Bellator, you certainly, God, was missing a born and bred fighter. Obviously the second guy to be coming out of the state of well, we'll fucking leave that because I forgot that name. But yeah, the second guy to come out of where Ben Askren came out from. Phenomenal wrestler, absolute phenomenal wrestler. And I wasn't wrong. I was not wrong. I said that he was not going to be able to take Dan Hooker down. And I was not wrong.
Yeah.
He didn't even try and take Dan Hooker down.
He didn't need to.
He fucking knocked him. He knocked him.
Spun his jaw.
Simple as that. The reason he's, no wonder he's called Iron Mike for no reason. His head movement were on point, and Jesus Christ, he has got some power. Now, Khabib, if you were watching him for a long time, no wonder you retired, mate, and no wonder you probably don't want to fight him. But if he is looking at getting 230 and all, he must be praying that, Jesus Christ, not against Chandler. If Chandler were able to do that against Dan Hooker, and Dan Hooker is one hell of a fucking fighter. He can take a punch and he can give a punch. He's been in the UFC and been around the block for a lifetime. He's Yeah, he may not have been a UFC world champion or a UFC interim champion, but that guy's got balls of steel and he will fight anybody from anywhere. I've said it so many times on this podcast, guys coming out of that city kickboxing, do not fuck about. And yes, fair enough, it may have got knocked out. It may be maybe sound me stupid now saying people coming out of a city kickboxing, but Jesus Christ, that just makes... I just want you to understand how good that makes Chandler look. The fact is he was able to do that to Dan Hooker in the first round when we had Conor McGregor saying he was going to finish it in 60 seconds and he was able to go out there and finish it in the first without no shit talking like that. And what can you say to this guy next? Yeah, fair enough, you come in, he's definitely going to take that. I wouldn't say he takes Hooker's spot, but I'd say he takes a spot up there. Perhaps number five spot.
We were talking of all the kind of like possibilities for this division, and it all did like kind of depend on not only this fight but the fight we're going to talk about in a minute. For me, you've got to look at the top four or five fighters in that division and say you need a tournament now to crown. I mean, you've got Charles Oliveira hitting the form of his life, a guy who's been in the UFC for so long and never was able to reach the heights. He's killing motherfuckers. You've got Justin Gaethje, who can beat anybody on his day. You've got, we'll talk about the winner of the next fight in a second, but then now you've got Michael Chandler throwing his name in the ring.
Selling his name in there.
You've got four fighters there that you could put in like a eliminators and say winner and winner takes on the either the champion if Habib wants to stick around or is for the title.
I totally agree with you. I say chuck the top 10, doesn't even matter who's in the top. I just do believe that because that top 5 is just a row of killers and there's no point in having that belt floating about. Just throw that top 10 in a full tournament and do it that way. Last guy is the champion and that's it. And I don't think I respect Khabib. I like Khabib. I love the way he fights. I love the way he carries himself in the sport, in the octagon and outside the octagon, but do not speak bullshit. Simple as that. You say you don't want to hold up a division. You say you don't want to be one of these other guys. Well, guess what? You are one of these other guys. You're saying you're retiring. You're saying, don't make me do things I don't want to do. Don't make me do things that's going to disrespect my mum. Give up the belt then. If you're retired, fair enough. Well done. You've gone 29-0. You literally are one of the GOATs. You're one of the greatest. Give up that belt and pass it on to the next champion in the UFC lightweight division. Yeah. Don't be the next Conor McGregor at what you was calling him for.
I don't think I honestly don't think that's a lot of Habib's doing. I think that's Dana's doing. I think Dana knows he's got a money making fight knows he had a money making fight with Conor versus Habib too, knows that's going to make absolute gangbusters. And he wanted, he's basically keeping Habib as interested as possible. Look at all the song and dance he performed about. There'd be an announcement on ABC, and the announcement was, yeah, we're waiting and see. I think he's trained so hard to get Habib to backtrack when it's Habib who's like, I'd need a reason to keep fighting. I think if it was up to Habib, he would have packed that title off by now.
That's it. It could possibly be the case, but does Khabib, he's seeming to get on a bit on the bigger side now and seeming to enjoying basically taking, I know it's a bit too early to say, like, but it seems like he's enjoying taking that, the role of what his father had, especially being the sort of the captain and the head of the team.
Yeah, the Eagle Gym, the some more of his family and cousins being signed for UFC, the fact that he could be an ambassador for the company in Russia, which is a massively expanding market.
He's got his own promotion now. Yeah. That's hopefully going to be on the UFC fight packs. Yeah. He's got too much stuff to... He's one of the... Like I always go on about it, about some fighters who are lucky enough to have got something that can go on about the fight, whether it being coaching or opening up their own academy or just doing little certain things. And Khabib is one of them special characters that has got so many things he could do and so many choices, where fighting's just same like McGregor. Money is not an issue when it comes to them. You can say to them, we'll give you 10 mil, we can give you 20 mil, we can give you 30 mil. Odds are, yes, they might take it, but it's not because they are taking it for the money, because these guys have got that sort of money. They can get that sort of money on a daily basis. So that's, I think Khabib is obviously, he's got more leeway, obviously, with being 29-0, being the guy he is, fighting the guys he's fought and beating the guys he has. He's definitely got more leeway, but he's definitely got to look at it and go in, right, do I just give the belt, retire, take myself out the pool, or do I just come out and fight the next potential fighter, which hopefully could be the next fight we're going to be speaking about.
So let's go on to that. The main event where so many fans come out of the woodwork and pretend that they've been UFC fans for such a long time. So many kind of plastic analysts. I mean, that's not us blowing our own trumpet at all. We're just fans like everybody else. But the amount of people who I've seen come out who are massive Conor McGregor fans rather than actual UFC fans. Yeah, it's fun. But the thing is, you need characters like that to bring sports like MMA to the masses, and it absolutely worked. But let's get into the fight. If you remember, and if you want to go back into the archives, we covered the first fight recently with a couple of special guests. And Carlos made some comments in re-watching that fight about how Dustin... how there was a game plan there and a kind of a blueprint for beating Conor, and it absolutely came true.
And I should have fucking put a bet on it and I didn't. I'm fucking fuming.
Yeah, so basically Carlos said the weak point that Conor had was taking out that front leg with calf kicks, and that's exactly what Dustin was able to do a lot in this first round, landing a lot of those calf kicks, and you could see the redness and the swelling come up pretty quickly. Conor was able to kind of like battle through it for the majority of the first round. It was only like near the end of it you could see that he was really struggling to feel that leg. And the thing when you're such a dynamic striker like Conor is, your legs are so important that you need to be able to kind of
especially his front leg.
Yeah, you need to be able to plant it to get to generate that power. But in the first round, McGregor landed the better shots. He rocked Poirier quite hard in the middle of the round. And whilst he was able to kind of like shake it off, there was, you could tell, or a seasoned watcher of Dustin's game could tell he was not fully recovered, because he was a lot wilder. He wasn't as crisp and clean as he normally is. You could tell it took him quite a long time for him to shake those cobwebs out. Conor just did really well in controlling against the cage, able to land those kind of shoulder shots, which got fired back to him very brutally by Dustin. You could tell they were really kind of like chatting shit to each other in the clinches. But the first round was very much a Conor victory for me. He just hit the harder shots, but that leg would come into being a factor in the second round. McGregor again started absorbing more shots on that leg, and it was really, really affecting him to the point where he was then focusing on trying to catch the leg rather than take the shot. And this worked for a little while. He was able to use that catching the leg to pin Dustin up against the cage. And he was able to land a lot of shots, but then a couple of massive lefts really kind of hurt Conor. You could see that he was rocked, and Poirier could tell that he was rocked. He'd really recovered from that first round and really upped his output. Landed a great right, floored McGregor, and much like the Chandler fight, Poirier just pounced and absolutely put McGregor out clean. Dustin Poirier gets his victory back from 6 years ago. And what it really stands out to me is the after fight interviews. And Conor said it best himself. The issue was he was inactive for so long, and Dustin got comfortable in that octagon because he's fought higher level opponents each time, and he was able to improve over that loss over Conor, really kind of step up his game to being one of the very best fighters in the world, where Conor has come in and he's almost been an exhibition fighter, taking on the fights with the likes of Nate Diaz at weights he wasn't really known for, taking on the Floyd Mayweather fight, coming back after so long out and taking out Cowboy in such short fight. He hasn't had the octagon time, and Dustin has put in those minutes, and it really, really showed. And Conor, as much as we kind of like to bash on him because of his cocky attitude, after the fight he was humble in defeat, and he realised that the issue was he hadn't fought enough, and he said that he wants to kind of up that game. For me, I'd say that any kind of more losses are definitely going to tarnish his legacy. This guy's making more money selling whiskey and clothes than he's ever made in MMA. Concentrate on that. That's your bread and butter, selling. And now I think the lightweight division has moved on past Conor McGregor. He's not the specialist fighter that he once was, I think.
Yeah, I don't think he's... Obviously, it's not going to be the last we see of him. He's definitely going to fight again, whether that be for... Now, this is Conor McGregor we're talking about, and this is the UFC. We're not speaking about a sport like boxing or WWE or football or something where it's... the next big thing is just around the corner, because money-wise, it's not. The next big thing is still, unfortunately, for the other fighters, but still, fortunately, for the UFC, is Conor McGregor. And doesn't matter where you place him, there's still going to be a lot of casual fans out there, as a lot of people like to call them, who will pay to watch Conor McGregor fight. And it's as simple as that. So, a win, lose or draw, there's always going to be people there to watch Conor McGregor. But it always makes you wonder that, why I'm always right. Because I was right on... I had to put that out there. But I was right, as simple as that, I was right. That's the way to beat Conor McGregor. No one has took out that front leg properly before. No one has tried to take out that front leg properly before, because everyone's always been scared of getting hit with that uppercut, getting hit with that left hand. And after when Dustin opened up in the first round, and he was like, I'm going to have to get fucking hit. And he opened himself up. And yes, I believe he did get hurt. Could have been playing possum, possibly, in the first round, a couple of times. Could have been playing a bit, oh, look at me, I'm wobbling, come into me. And then whilst you do it, I'm going to kick your leg. Could have been. But he definitely went for this fucking game plan that he was going to do in the first fight. And definitely in the first fight, it was leg kicks and hooks. And that's exactly what we saw in this fight. Leg kicks and hooks. McGregor got caught early in the first round with a beautiful left hook, and near enough got put down there, and luckily enough he didn't, and that first round was all on him. He looked like Jesus Christ, Conor McGregor is going to do his thing again. Right, well that's it, unfortunately. Sorry Poirier, but your time's not now. It looks like he's going to beat you. And Dustin just turned that around for the better, and them leg kicks, he got to the point where he didn't even have to throw them all. The last two or three leg kicks he threw were just tapping, just to basically tell McGregor, like, he's still hurting you, innit? Like, yeah, there you go. I'll show you why he's still hurting you. And as soon as you take that away from McGregor, he can no longer throw his capoeira kicks. He can no longer throw the powerful front peak kicks to the body, what he absolutely loves, because he did that against Chad Mendes to break him down. And he can no longer get them powerful shots off, because if you can't put your pressure on your front leg, you can't get any power behind your left hand. And if he can't do that, and that's what McGregor always does, McGregor always has a tendency to overextend, and that's because he waits for his opponent to come in, just like a lion or a tiger or anything like that does. It'll just wait for his opponent to get, or the prey, to just get in close enough range just so they can strike and touch him. They don't have to hurt him, but so they can strike and touch him. And McGregor's always been one of them to always shoot as soon as you get into the space where he's able to touch him. He were able to do that against Dustin, but Dustin were able to capitalise his time. Dustin were able to... The £10 definitely helped. The carrying the extra £10 definitely helped Justin being able to absorb McGregor's shots, because as well, McGregor was weighing in an extra £10 more than what they last fought, which again is going to equivalent to A, power, but B, it's also going to put strain on his body, because £10 fighting-wise is a lot of weight when you're carrying it around in the octagon.
Yep.
Especially when you're going into the later rounds against someone like Dustin Poirier. In his last 5 fights, he's had brutal wars, and it's not like they've been quick fights like McGregor. He was humble enough to say he was inactivity throughout the year, and throughout the previous year before that. The 40 seconds against Donald was not enough. Fair enough, a win's a win, but the 40 seconds was not enough. He didn't have enough time, and Poirier's been ripping it up ever since. And I want to say that I love the fact that Poirier won. I don't, but I like the fact that he won. It makes it one for one now. There's always going to be that selling point there for him and Conor, and it's always good for a fight to fight Conor McGregor. It's a payday for him. Mm-hmm. Don't matter who you are, you fight Conor McGregor, you're going to get paid. And the fact is that Nate, he's got that fight in somewhere down the line, possibly that could happen. And now Dustin, because it's just set in stone that fight possibly be there with Conor McGregor. Who's the actual better fighter? Is it Conor? Is it Dustin? You've always, that question's always going to be there. 5 years ago when they first fought with Conor, they've both evolved. Now it's Dustin. 2 years more down the line, if they fight again, you know, who's going to be the best fighter then? And it's, in this sport, you never know. Like we're saying, you've got fighters who can go on streaks like Khabib, undefeated. You can go on fights like, who's the one we were speaking about earlier? Who was literally going on up and down street?
Sanchez,
that's it. I'll think of Ricky Simon then. But
he's the same though.
Yeah, well, yeah, even say that. Like, when you're on an up and down streak, and I believe it can somewhat go that way for McGregor, but hopefully Dustin, he can somewhat see that light at the end of the tunnel. He's been in the UFC for a long time now. He's fought his arse off for the best. He's beat some of the best, and the only person to beat him is, obviously recently, is Khabib. And obviously Khabib's retired now, and how can you say no to him and Chandler for that belt, especially with the way that they've both finished Dan Hooker and Conor McGregor? That is two opponents that are hard opponents who can take a punch and who are well known, and Michael Chandler's coming in his debut, and Dustin Poirier's come to take the revenge that he's long waited for.
Mm.
How can you tell them to no?
I think there's two other fighters though that could probably say no, we deserve it as well, in Gaethje and Charles Oliveira. So
yeah, but you could also say that, but then I'd love the fight again. This is why the tournament makes so much sense, because you've always, like you were saying, the tournament, it does make so much sense, because you've always got that energy of going, yeah, Charles Oliveira is an absolute animal, but he beat Tony, who was already somewhat on a losing way. And then you've got Gaethje, who some people could say, oh, well, he didn't deserve a shot because he already had a shot. He already had a shot, and then he's just not long got beat off Khabib. And then, obviously, so the tournament makes sense in every single way you speak about it. And I think you're hearing it from Mystic Mac. I think there's going to be a tournament for that belt.
Yeah, and for me, I would keep Poirier and Chandler apart, because I'd honestly go with Poirier taking on Oliveira and Chandler versus Gaethje. I think they're the better fights, and then you get the chance for Poirier against Chandler for either the belt or for the right to take on Khabib if he decides to come back.
And you also keep Conor active if he wants to be, and you put that Nate Diaz rematch back.
Yeah, I think if Conor does fight again, he's gonna be special exhibition fights, I think his time at the top of the lightweight division may be over.
Yeah, I don't think he don't want to tarnish his record. Like, fair enough, once he's finished, he wants to be able to look at his record and go, that's a decent record. But
he also needs to be a left at the right time.
But that's he's got that much money where people say, oh, why, you've got the money, you've got this, you've got that. Yeah, it's fair enough, but then it just goes to show that the struggles of being a full-time professional fighter once you've been doing it for so long, that it just, for some reason, and I can't explain it yet, hopefully in 10 years, 20 years time, I might be able to explain it, but when I've spoke to fighters who have been in the game for that long, they find it hard to say no, find it hard to somewhat stay out of it.
A couple of years at the best before they get that itch
and thirst that they need to get back in the gym, they need to get back into competing, they need to get back into fighting. And sometimes it's not even just about earning money, it's just about that need to fight, need to be able to feel, it sounds weird because you're locked in a cage, but for some people, it makes them feel free.
Yeah, it's the thrill of the fight, you get addicted to it, I think.
Absolutely.
So yeah, that's a McGregor versus Poirier 2 in a nutshell. So there's no UFC event next week, but lucky for us, the UFC provided 2 events over the past 7 days, and one we've kept in our pocket for next week, Chiesa versus Magny. So Carlos and I'll be rewatching that and going over it, and then after that we're in quite a long streak of events for Dana, who said that 2021 is not going to be as hectic as 2020 was. We've got 4 massive events in a row, and then some huge fights that are coming up in March. So definitely keep your ears peeled and your eyes locked on the 5 rounds feed for that. But yeah, that's all we've got time for today, guys. So you can follow me on Twitter at DJ Kirby. Follow Carlos here at Kirby_Carlos. Follow the podcast at 5 Rounds Pod. Make sure you go and follow the networks as well. Visionaries Global Media, Chair Shot Radio, and Shooting the Sports Ish. Check out Carlos's interviews on the Shooting the Sports Ish YouTube and Podbean, because the guy's been putting in some real work and doing really well with those. Got a massive, massive one coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Absolutely, much appreciated.
And hopefully it's not the first big name that Carlos will be speaking with. So yeah, definitely keep checking out Carlos's content. But yeah, that's basically it, guys. And that is the end.
Dana, stop ripping your fans off. Give them a decent stream. Especially when you're charging them the best part of $100, you prick. Adios, amigos.
Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.